Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, Ian and I are doing a question and answer session, answering some of your questions. So let's get started. Hey Ian, how are you?
Hi Mark. Excellent. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I hear good. You're in Abersock.
I'm in. Yeah, I'm in Abersock. I know, that's I'm on nice. Holiday. I completely forgot about the podcast, but it must happen every Monday.
Yeah.
8:30. Exactly. I've got a gin and tonic in my hand and a beer in the other.
Well, as it's morning here, I haven't got either of those.
No.
So that would be a worry. Right, so we're going to do a question and answer session today. Because we haven't done one in a while.
Yeah.
We've got a few questions from our happy listeners, and just going to go through them basically.
Awesome.
So this is the first one's from Colin. He runs a kind of kitchenware cookware store, and he just wants to know what his conversion rate should be. Just as a general
average conversion rate.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good, really good question. And it's obviously conversion rate is one of the most important things. It's how many people come into your site that buy. So I would always say that it depends on the lifetime customer value of the business. Roughly, if you split it into two, so if you're recruiting at anything between 1% and 2%, you should be happy. Now, and the reason why it goes between 1% and 2% is because of the average order value. So if it's a higher average order value, so if it is kitchen gadgets like an espresso machine and things like that, then it's a little bit more of a considered purchase because the average order value is a bit higher. So you'd expect to be lower, you know, around one, of just above one. But if it's a lower average order value, so if it's fashion, you'd expect to be recruiting at about two. But overall, the overall conversion rate should be really about 4% or 5% if you are a normal e-commerce site. And the reason why I would say 4% to 5% is because you'll have a mixture of existing customers. So existing customers who come back and buy again, they show themselves in the conversion rate stat. So that's why, you know, you'll have a site that's quite mature and it's been going for 10 years and it's got 100,000, 200,000 people on their customer house file, you'll see conversion rates of 5.5%, 6% all day long. And it's not necessarily that their website's doing anything magical. It's because they've got a good mix of existing customers coming back. And of course they convert much higher than a new customer who doesn't know who you are. You know, you have to convince them that you're the right business. So I would say general up to 2% for if you're a brand new site recruiting, but around 5% or 6% if you've got a good existing customer base.
Yeah. So basically, they built the snowball is built into a bit of a boulder, and it's rolling down the hill, and it's got a bit of momentum. I mean, the thing with kitchenware is that you're only going to get people buying maybe once or once and a half times a year, because you don't tend to kind of think, oh, I'm just going to go and buy a new saucepan every month. It's just not that kind of purchase. And so your conversion rate is going to be slightly dampened by that compared to, say, a clothing store or something like that.
The extreme would be somebody selling contact lenses. I mean, I know we were working with someone who was selling contact lenses, and they were saying their conversion rate of 15% was very average. And obviously we were looking at it for the first time going, oh my God, we've never seen a site convert at 15%. But there was still massive gains to be had, but that was just their business model. So the, the biggest impact on your conversion rate is going to be the type of products you're selling and the type of the customers you have.
So but if you take a step back, it's actually the actual conversion rate doesn't matter. I know that sounds ridiculous, but what actually matters is the is whether you're making profit from your paid ads. So if you're putting in, you know, £10 and getting £100 out and getting, so that's a ROAS, that's a return on advertised spend of 10. And your conversion rate is 0.5, but you're getting a 10 a return on advertised spend. It doesn't matter because you're making so much money, because obviously in that case, you've got quite a high average order value, maybe £500 or something like that. But your low conversion rate doesn't matter because your return on advertised spend is profitable. And if you've got a profitable return on advertised spend, you can scale it. You can say, gosh, I put £10 in, I got £100 out. I'm going to go and put £100 in and see if I can get £1,000 out. So that's fundamentally what your business is. You know, what we talk
that's
about
so
with,
true.
Our, with our KPIs is that when, you know, when you do your paid traffic, say you can go and spend £3,000 a month, and then you hit the ceiling of that level, then you need to go and look at your conversion rate. Then you need to go and look at your KPIs in order to be able to scale the site. So the question is, why are you asking about your conversion rate now? Is that the bottleneck in the business? Is that the bottleneck in the business that's stopping you raising paid traffic spend? And is that the thing to be talking about?
Yeah, it's funny. I had the I had a conversation with a client this morning, and we were talking about a 3-year roadmap and scaling to I think doing about 3.5 million now, and I want to get to 6.5 million. And they were talking about conversion rates and CROW, and you know, presuming that that's everything that we would be talking about. And I said, well, actually, we might find that your return on ad spend now is massively profitable, and the immediate thing you should do is increase your spend. And until you get to that point where the maths don't work, let's say you have a times four ROAS, and you know that you can spend all day long. You spend £1, you get £4 back. And how many pounds would you spend? You'd spend as much as you could if you knew the maths work. And so that might be the first thing that we would do. And that CROW, or conversion rate optimization, might be something that's much further down the, you know, the roadmap, you know, in 8-9 months time.
Yeah. And so you're absolutely right. The limitations of CROW, because, you know, if you're just a conversion rate optimization, you can't really look at the business as a whole. You know, it might be, and it's basically they're just moving things around the website and moving the flow, which is great, and you can make a lot of benefits from that. But if it, like, there's fundamental problems with the business, you're not going to fix that by changing the fonts and things like that. So
changing the shade of the shade of green on an ad to basket button.
And also, sometimes you come to a website like that, you know, doing 3.5 million, and all the stats look good. And you're like, well, the ad to basket's fine, and the average order value is fine. And it's like, well, you're going to have to put this, in order to work out where your next bottleneck is, you're going to have to put this business under pressure. You're going to have to go and buy some more paid traffic, which will probably be not profitable. And then you go and look at the KPIs and go, well, why wasn't that new traffic profitable? What do we need to work on? Because otherwise, it looks good. You're like, well, you've got to put it under more pressure. If you want to grow, it's going to be more under more pressure. Yeah. It's like going to the gym.
So you basically spend, as a very simple, you know, analogy, you spend as much as you can until your return on ad spend doesn't work. You know, you're losing money. And you keep spending, and that's why you would then go and improve the conversion rate or the average order value. Because you know, you'll have to do something. You'll either have to get them to spend more money whilst they're there, or get more people to buy.
I mean, of course, if you're starting out and you have not sold anything and you're not selling very much and you can't get your first bit of paid traffic, obviously then you're going to have to work on your conversion rate and your ad to basket rate, which is what I talk about a lot with my 10K core people. They've just got to get started with something. But if you're doing 3.5 million, then, you know, it's different. Anyway, should we go on to the question number two? Which is from Jenny, and she wants to raise her average order value. She's selling furniture, And typically people tend to buy just one item of furniture, and she wants to, well, she knows she needs to raise the average order value to actually get more out of the more return from her paid spend. So what would you recommend?
Well, I think Jenny, from memory, her average order value is about £120.
It's very good memory of
so
you.
So she's selling things that are they're not massive big furniture pieces. They're more sort of side tables and more sort of singular items. I mean, there's only two ways to increase your average order value. It's either, number one, more expensive products, or number two, more items per order. And, you know, that's it, really. And I think, as a general rule, more items per order is one of the first things and probably the easiest things you can do, where you're doing upsells and cross sells and sweetie pages and three for twos and mix and match. All these things that we've been using for years and years and years. But we find that you can only really get about 10% out of that, because obviously not everyone's going to go for the average order value upsell or the cross sell or the sweet. No matter how clever we are, you know, we might be, let's say, so you're not going to double the average order value by having a clever upsell. You know, at the end of the day, if someone doesn't want to buy, they won't, no matter how good the offer is, but you potentially just erode the margin so much. So 10% there. So the other option is to increase your price of the product, and as she will increase her prices of her products or introduce more expensive products, her average order value will go up, but also her desirability has to go up as well. You know, so you can't, the business changes when you're selling something for £120 versus something at £420. The desirability's got to go up. You know, you can't just necessarily plonk the product unless your brand can cope with that, because that often happens. You know, the same buyer will actually buy more expensive items. I've seen that happen a lot over the years. And there's a big famous home furnishing business that was doing 5 million, stuck at 5 million for 3 years. And they all of a sudden started selling things that were much higher value, like rugs and oak stools, that trebled their average order value overnight. And
so they didn't put the prices up of their existing products. They just brought on new products that were slightly higher price.
Yeah.
I think another way to increase the average order value, which is I see it less used, is if you think, let's say someone's buying, well, I'm looking at my office chair. So, you know, it's a nice office chair. It's a leather office chair. Now the buyer's going for that office chair. Now maybe, I don't know, it's £250 or something. So some of those buyers, very price sensitive, just want to get the office chair, £250. Some of the buyers actually buying that chair, slightly less price sensitive, and will be willing to maybe go for a little upgrade on it. You know, so in the drop downs, when they're selecting the colors and the size, you can have a little kind of like bonus option on that chair. So maybe you get leather coated armrests, or do you want to have a different coloured bottom? You know, like, you can have different options that might add, you know, £20, £25.
It caters for someone who's more price sensitive versus someone who actually wants to get that job done better, who's willing to spend a bit more.
Yeah, so therefore, the same product page, you can deal with both those people. The buyer that wants to get it for £250 and that's all they can sell. But then the buyer is kind of like, no, I really want to get this done nice. I want this to look great in my office. This is going to be a real piece, and I'd really like that to match that. So if you think about your products like that, whatever you're selling, there's usually something that you could do as a little upgrade to it that will add, you know, 10, 20, even 30% to the product price, if you can kind of get interest in it. Now, say you're selling drawers, maybe you can sell a lining, you know, you can line them with something, leather or suede lined or something like that.
Well, I think it's going through your whole, I mean, I'll do this for your biggest best-selling products first, you know, because if you've got 1,000 products, it's really hard to go through every single one. But if you do it, the ones that are going to have the biggest impact, which is the most highest selling products. I think, you know, the reason why it's so important, average order value, is, you know, you're either selling other people's products or you're selling your own branded products, your own brand. And obviously for both businesses, it's crucial. But if you're selling other people's products, then, you know, and you've got a really slick way of getting the average order value up, you win the race. So it allows you to spend more on Google Shopping. So if you're selling a particular, you know, we'll use an example, a particular speaker, you know, it's it's a Bluetooth speaker, it's model XYZ, and you know, the price is fixed, you can't sell it any cheaper, but you've got a page that's got a really good upsell, an average order value boosting system. It might come with an extra charger or a stand that it goes, or something else that goes with it. And the way you do it is great. Then all of a sudden you're then bidding on a product. Let's say everyone's selling it for £350, but you've got this clever AOV system. So you get the order for £400, whereas everyone else is bidding for that £350. So who's going to win the race on Google Shopping? You are,
because you can bid higher than everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also those upgrades, you know, going back to the furniture one, or even what you were talking about, if you can hit the right upgrade, little bonus upgrade, that might be your complete USP, your unique selling point. You're like, you're the only one that's putting the leather interior inside of drawers, and suddenly that becomes the thing the market wants. And it's like, well, you know, they're the only ones to do it. Or maybe they want personalization on something and they're the only one doing that. And then it becomes,
the margins are much higher on the upsells typically as well.
Yeah. And then suddenly it's like, well, basically you're selling cars, isn't it? It's the car mats and the things that that's where the margin they get for it. So, you know, you've got to hustle a little bit and work out what those are. And then, you know, then you might stumble on something that is absolutely massive. And it's like, well, gosh, personalizing office chairs, I thought that wouldn't be a thing. But now I'm getting all this money and I'm actually getting a higher average order value than I was before. So, you know, I'm going to do that. So the next question is from David. David, I think. Yeah. So what should the overall bounce rate be, and what is a bounce rate? And he hasn't actually said what his site is, but that's obviously, I mean, I get questions quite a lot, actually, people just asking, you know, what the bounce rate is. And I think it can be confusing when you're starting out, because it's, I mean, it kind of sounds like people come onto the website and bounce straight away, which some of them do. But a bounce rate can actually be someone sitting on one page without touching anything else on the website. They could be on the website for 20 minutes and then leave. And that would still be classed as a bounce. It's basically someone coming onto the website and not touching any other links. So, you know, what would you say would be an overall good bounce rate and overall bad bounce rate?
Well, the bounce rate is a very interesting stat, because it's first of all, it's the lifeblood of the business, because it shows where people are landing. That's why it's more important to look at than anything, really. So it's, you know, because it shows where the traffic's coming in. And the reason why it's an interesting stat is because we're an e-commerce business. We are we're trying to get people to buy. So most of the cases, if they do bounce, you know, we're not an information site, you know, where, you know, they're just looking for some information. We're actually trying to sell something. So if they do buy, they have to add it to basket. So the first thing they would do ultimately would be adding it to basket. If they don't, you know, that's the first step. So if they bounce, then it's a really, really bad thing to happen. So if the overall bounce rate, typically for the whole site, we would normally average it at about 40%. So overall, 40%. And that's the stat you can see in Google Analytics in the summary overview. And then if you break it down, you then say, well, the bounce rate depends on where they land. So typically break it into three. So homepage should bounce less than 25%. Category less than 50, product less than 60%. So that's the overall. And because you'll have some pages that are bouncing really high, which is where you want to look at. So it's an indication of where you need to work on the site. And, you know, you'll find that, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, people, the bounce rate's much higher now than it was 5 or 6 years ago. And that's down to one thing. It's that people are going straight to the product pages now, and they're not coming to the home pages. And that's because of Google Shopping and Facebook product ads. They're coming straight to the product page. And so you'll find bounce rates on the product page at like 85%. And it's often because people are still building websites now based on what people used to do 5 years ago, which is where they come through the home page, category page, and then the product listing pages, and then the product page. And by the time they got to the product page, they were very warmed up. But that's not how people shop now. They come straight from Google Shopping into the you know, the depths of one of a site in a product page, so they've got no idea where they are. And it's, you know, and that's why, you know,
well, what kind of company they've landed on.
Yeah, they don't know who it is, and they don't know where that product sits in the whole range. And people very rarely buy the first product that they land on. And, you know, they want to see other things. And even if they really like that product, there might be other things that they like more. So we talk about this a lot, but the product page is the area that tends to be the failing because it's a dead end page. So there's nowhere else to go. So it should be a signpost of, I mean, it's just like going into a retail store or a supermarket, or, you know, it's the the shelf edges. You know, when you look in the supermarket, what, you know, the certain aisles, you know where things are, and that, you know, this is what you have to do with your site. You've got to show people where they are. And this isn't the only red jumper. You know, there's lots of red jumpers here. So the bounce rate's absolutely fundamental as a stat to own and love, because it tells you what people don't like.
Well, think about it.
Where you need to optimize.
In terms of a physical store, you know, you've got like a bike shop selling cycles. Now, before, people would come in the front door, they'd have to then go through the middle bit, which would be like their category, and then they'd go up to the bike to have a look at a bike. And now they're dropping through the ceiling straight in front of the bike that they want to look at. So it's also like
dropping through a ceiling in a you know, a black tent, you know, you know, around you with no other bikes there.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, hang on, what the hell?
Yeah, you know, so you can't. So before, you come through the door, you could see the context, you could see the brand, you could see who was working there, you could see how the store felt. You can maybe, you know, and then suddenly you're just jumping to the floor in a black tent and only seeing that bike. And you've got, well, who's this company? You know, do I trust them? You know, is this, you've got to create that same environment, that same kind of flow on the product page now that you used to get by walking through the front door of the business. Because that's what's happening.
Yeah, it's why the product page
is a big shift.
It's a massive shift, and it's why the product page is so, so important. It's by far the most important page of any e-commerce site now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, and our last question is: it's a company starting to sell sheets online, and they want to know how to start. This is from John. And what do they do basically? How do they actually, you know, how do they position the business? So what do you think?
Yeah, well, it's a big growing market. You know, quite a loyal customer. Once you get one sheet that you love, you then tend to be quite loyal. Margins are quite good. And the best way, we would always say, to look at a market, if you're just starting, or you're essentially, if you want to go into a new market, easiest way is to go and look at the pain points and the joy and the pain, really. And the easiest way to do it is to go and look at the reviews on Amazon for your competitors' products, to see what people really hate about the products and see what people really love about the products. And it's
so when they're upset, what are they upset about? And when they are happy, what are they happy about? And then, you know, like we do in the course, we go through a matrix and we put those reviews into buckets, and then we work out which are the most in ones. And you probably find for sheets that softness is one of the big ones, you know, and then you might find that fitting of a sheet, like clothing, fit is huge for for clothing and also for bedding. If it doesn't fit, there's going to be annoyed about it, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, it's been this was something we did last week, didn't we? So I'm saying you're probably fine, but we did it. We've just done it. We went through the results this morning. And it's so obvious. You know, you think you know, oh, people will buy my products because I know they're really interested in this. But that might be, you might be way off. You have to go with what your customers are telling you. And you can't just do it once. You have to do it regularly. And it's so awesome because you can...
Well, it just takes the emotion out of it, doesn't it?
But essentially, what simple process is you go on to and you download... I mean, how many reviews do you download typically, Mark?
About 500. I only did 500 for this one. But you can do 200. You'll probably get good results in 200.
And then you categorize them. So you read the review and you go, what are they talking about here? And it's a negative review. You know, they're talking about fit. They don't like the fit. Yeah. Or a negative review, they're talking about quality. And then and then you do the same for the positive reviews. And you categorize them. So you might have I don't know, 6 or 7 different categories for the negative ones, 6 or 7 different categories for the positive ones. And you put each one in the category, and then you add them up at the bottom and it says, right, people really hate the fact that it doesn't fit the bed properly and it gets like wrinkles in it and bumps. But people really love the softness and the quality. And therefore know exactly how to position those products. You know what to say on the product page and in the whole strap line of the site, and it becomes really easy to position them because you're looking at what people are telling you.
To the people already, the people on the 10K core group, there is a template in the course for them to use. So that if you're listening to this and you're on the 10K core, there's a template in the course. You can literally just go and fill yours in. So it's all done for you. And obviously the people on the level 2 course, we'll do this for you. So, you don't need to do this yourself. We'll actually do it for you.
I've never done the exercise and not been really wowed by what we found. Find like, oh my God, that's so obvious. How did we not? That's clearly what people want.
It's really only half the battle though, isn't it? I mean, because basically then you found out it's softness and fit, right? And then it becomes the question is like, how can we prove to the market that ours is the softest sheets and the best fitting sheets? Then it's about proof.
Because
what you're actually kind of uncovering is the job to be done. You're uncovering something that's a key aspect of the job to be done. So it's like another clue in your detective e-commerce. You've got your detective hat on and you found out that something about the job to be done, it needs to be really soft. And something about the job to be done, it needs to be really well fitting. So that kind of, you know, that gives you an idea that the job to be done is a sheet that feels amazing, but is very easy to deal with, you know, like to put on the bed and take off. And it just, you know, it just works. And it's like, it basically kind of hinting that it's a good night's sleep, you know, and a good night's sleep is a good life and feeling good. So that's the job to be done. And then, so therefore, those are people know what the job to be done obviously is. And then they're making sure that the job can be done by these aspects. And therefore, you've got to prove that your sheets fill this job to be done better than anybody else. So, you know, then you've got to look, say it's softness. You then go onto the market and on Google and you start going, well, which products are sold on softness and how do they convey softness? And there's big, massive FTSE, you know, 100 brands who've got products that sell completely on softness, and you can go and look at all their marketing, and it might be, you know, toilet paper, for example, like they're sold on softness. How do they convey softness? And how do they, you know, they've done, spent huge amounts of money. Labrador puppies and things like that. So therefore, you know, you just have to basically go, right, that works. So therefore we need to bring that into our visual marketing and how can we convince them it's fit? And that might be you know, asking them slightly more questions than normal people do. So what size bed have you got? You know, there might be a fit calculator where it asks you what size of mattress you've got, how high is it across the bed, and a few more questions so that then people go, oh, they're asking a few more questions. Now I'm comfortable.
Yeah. You've got to give them the perception that you understand their anxiety.
Yeah. Do you have a topper on the bed? Things like that.
You know, yeah, and it might be the product is the same as everybody else's, but because you're asking people a few more questions and you're talking about it, they it takes away the anxiety. And you might say that, you know, our sheets have been designed by a top 5-star hotel manager of, you know, and he's designed these sheets because he was sick of sheets not fitting properly, you know, and those type of things.
Well, I was thinking of saying this company we're designing this for, you know, maybe that it's an ex, someone who's used to work on super yachts and some of that, the 5-star hotels, and they found a sheet that actually, you know, was relatively inexpensive. And you'd think all these rich people would be going for these really rich sheets, but actually this is the sheet material they wanted. You know, you start building story around, now you know it's softness and fit. You start building story around.
It helps it really helps you position it. Yeah. And your imagery and your tone of voice and your copy, you know, and your returns policy, everything, you know, can be built into it. It makes everything clear. So I think it's one of the missing things that people, you know, for me anyway, I think it was the glue that helps you understand the job to be done. And
a lot of people make the mistake of coming at, you know, when you're first starting a brand, you think, well, I like sheets like this, and so I'm going to build a brand around myself, and I'm going to do this. And on one hand, people, I mean, that's slightly different, because basically, yes, you need to, people are buying from people these days from e-commerce sites, but at the same time, you can't set up a business for yourself. You can't set up a business that you think you want, because at the first start, you know, how much are entrepreneurs? 10% of this population? 10% of the population are people who set their own businesses up. So by default, you're different than the majority of people out there in the world. So
it's interesting, because a lot of businesses do start though from somebody saying, right, this is what I need. There's nothing on the market that does this, or I really want to do this. And they put a collection of products together that they would really like. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. You know, and in some cases it can work incredibly well. We've had examples of clients that we work with who've really, really known the customers well. And consequently have understood the job to be done and really scaled. And that was the one thing they did really well. But what we're basically saying is that you've got to continually do this. And particularly if you're going into a slightly new territory or slightly, you're a market extension where you're selling certain products to somebody and then you want to start adding on other products. That can certainly help. But if you want to sell more, if you want to get to the next level, you want to tap into much more paid advertising.
You're setting up a sheet business, you really know sheets, and you know that the best sheets are these is Egyptian cotton, blah, 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 so many thread count, right? You geek out on it. So then you put it on the website and you go, oh, it's got this Egyptian cotton, blah, 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 thread count. Blah. And then for the most of people who come to the website, they've got no idea what Egyptian cotton is, what thread count is. You know, like you're so into this thing that the average consumer who buys this once every 3 years has got no idea what you're talking about. So therefore, what you have to do is you have to get your geekiness, which is your thing, and you have to then use that knowledge to actually convey it in a way that those people will understand. Because, the great thing is you're in a business you know you really understand, and you're buying really good product and you understand it. But at the same time, you have to understand that the 90% of the people out there, they don't understand it to the same level you do. And you've known about this stuff for such a long time that you're too close to it now. And you need to actually work out, where's the average Joe? How can I bring them on a journey in order to actually sell them this product? And that's cool. Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to say was, don't hide behind your brand. Because, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to put the brand out there and, you know, so I can sell it at some day. I'm not going to add myself to it. But that's changing, and people actually want to buy from people. And we're starting to see the people who are putting themselves, you know, front and foremost with the brand and building the brand around them with the e-commerce site are doing the best. I mean, you look at last week we did a hot seat with Kate. You know, she's front and foremost with that brand. And that's why people are buying from them. They trust Kate. They understand what she's doing and they want to buy into it. And so, you know, if she just put a trail running site out there with no Kate, it would be doing 5% of what it's doing.
Mm.
So, you know, people want to buy from people, especially now with social media and influencer marketing and all that kind of stuff. They want to know who you are. So now is the time to step forward.
Otherwise, you're just a box shifter, aren't you? You know, you're literally just plonking products on the website and expecting people to buy.
Mm.
Yeah, they want the personality, and it certainly adds to credibility and reassurance, and social proof, and all the things that we talk about.
Yeah, and when we're small businesses, you know, that's what we've got to compete against. Someone like Argos. You go into Argos, you don't know who's behind Argos. You're just buying something. It's just there. Mm-hmm. It's just on price. Whereas if you're buying from a personal stuff, you're actually buying from Dave, and Dave is this person. You got to know him a little bit. It's like us. People listen to our podcasts. And now they know who we are and what we do, you know. And whereas if they were buying from a generic, something, they wouldn't know anything about the people. And therefore, you start to understand who they are, what they are, and what you can expect from that business based on the person who's running it or the people that was running it. It's a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. I better let you get back to your gin and tonic.
I know. It's gone warm now. The ice has melted.
What are you going to do?
Well, I've been drinking it. It's okay.
Have you? I did think you were getting more slurred as you ran through it.
Yeah, it helps my creative thinking.
Yeah, good. All right, so I'll just do the usual message about the book. So if you haven't grabbed our book, it's available at www.ecommercebook.co.uk. And we are going to, next week I'm going to be launching the book in America and New Zealand and Australia and all those other exciting places. So we'll be probably creating a URL that's not .co.uk at some point. But anyway, stay tuned and we'll all speak to you next week. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Bye.